Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. I am joined by myself, though, for the second time tonight because GarageBand deleted my first version of the episode. So this is just a great night. It was a really good weekend, though. The Lakers go into Portland, get a win in Portland, which true Laker fans, the Laker fans who date back before even this crappy run, will know that wins in Portland can be difficult to come by. So you take them whichever way you can possibly get them. So they go into Portland, win there, and then come home the next night and beat Dallas, who, granted, was also on the second night of a back-to-back, but again, against Portland in Portland, you take every win you can possibly get. And then against good teams in the NBA, which the Dallas are still a good team, albeit somewhat flawed, and I think we kind of saw some reasons for skepticism about that team last night. But against good teams in the NBA, you take wins whenever you can get them. I do want to touch on those flaws that we kind of saw from the Dallas team. I want to give Frank Vogel some credit for a tweak to their approach in guarding the Dallas Mavericks last night. I really like that. And then, once again, because it's a day that ends in Y, we are going to ask for more Alex Caruso playing time. Let's start, though, with giving credit where credit is due, though, for Frank Vogel and his coaching staff. They had a wing guard, Kristaps Porzingis, for much of his time on the court. And what that does is it allows your defense to have more typical spacing against what is essentially a really tall wing, right? Porzingis doesn't play the position the way that you would normally think somebody his size would play the center spot. He essentially plays a wing on offense. He doesn't post up. He doesn't even like rolling to the basket when he does a pick and roll. He's more of a pick and pop type player. So by putting a wing on him, you basically allow the big who would be guarding him and would be stretched out to the three-point line. Well, that player plays a more natural position because Dallas is still going to play somebody at the dunker spot. And what that allows you to do is by taking JaVale or AD or Dwight off of Porzingis because you weren't afraid of his post-up. If anything, you want to goad him into posting up. Dallas didn't do much of that still. They aren't ever going to do that. Carlisle is too smart a coach to get goaded into that kind of a thing. But what that does is it allows the bigs on your team, the JaVales, the Dwights, whatever, to stay closer to the basket, closer to their natural, where they feel more comfortable at on the court. And I do think the way that the Lakers approach defense had a lot to do with why Dallas only put up 95 points. This is the best offense in the NBA right now, one of the best offenses in the NBA, and the Lakers made them look pretty constipated throughout the night. That said, the Lakers didn't exactly look free-flowing or whatever. It was a pretty ugly game all the way around, as you would probably expect. With two teams coming off of a back-to-back, but you know what? You take wins however you can possibly get them, especially against teams like Dallas, and the Lakers finish out the month 9-5. Given what we thought was in store for the team, I predicted 10-5 because I suck at math, but the Lakers go 9-5. It's essentially what I was asking for out of this month, and now have an easier slate ahead of them. All right, now that I gave Vogel credit, and by the way, you guys know how Sunday night shows go. I'm going to answer your guys' questions in segments 2 and 3 here in a second. But now that I've given Vogel credit, I do kind of have a problem with the way that he broke up the guard rotation again. You have Avery Bradley playing 23 minutes, 8 of which came in the first quarter. I don't think Avery Bradley should ever be on the court for 8 straight minutes of anything unless he's at a local Y. And then you have Rajon Rondo playing 18 minutes. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope earned the 25 that he got. He should probably get the bulk of the 2-spot minutes, even maybe over Danny Green. While Green continues to kind of mess with his shooting or try to get his shooting under control. or not under control, but more predictable. But then, you know, at the lower rung of the totem pole of the guys who played actual rotation minutes, not counting garbage time minutes, Caruso played 16. So I don't think, like, at some point soon, we have to start seeing Caruso get more minutes than guys like Rondo, guys like Avery Bradley. His offense is improving, and he's still the best defensive player. He made some nice defensive plays on Luka Doncic when they were kind of icing out the game. Throughout the game, his rotations are still among the better on the team right now. He's not the offensive player that Rajon Rondo once was. Caruso is probably objectively a better player than Avery Bradley now. So if you're looking for ways to solve the math here, just give Caruso some of Bradley's minutes. If you don't want to take them away from Rondo for team politics reasons, take them away from Bradley, give them to Caruso, and you have that pretty much figured out. Overall, though, again, the Lakers win 108-95 against Dallas. They took care of business the night before in Portland. That's a nice back-to-back weekend, wrapping up an overall nice month. Now, would you like to have swapped out one of the wins against a lesser team for a win against Milwaukee or against the Clippers? Obviously, sure, that would make us walk away from this month feeling even better. But overall, you have to beat the teams that are put in front of you. Dallas is still a good team, even while it was kind of a weird game with both teams coming off of a back-to-back and Doncic kind of going down at one point with that weird fall on his back or whatever. But overall, you take these wins, and you keep this thing going, and you know, you now start 2020 with plenty of reason for optimism. They have a nice easy stretch ahead of them for about 6 or 7 games they should take care of business in, and you hope that the rotation starts getting figured out a little bit better now that everybody seems to be healthy, and you start to really build on the season that they've had thus far. And you know, it's nice to go through a 4-game losing streak, come out the other end of it, and still have, you know, a 2 or 3 game cushion over the next best team in the conference. And, you know, that's why the Lakers worked their butts off in the early part of the year and now have that gap to figure things out if they do drop a game here and there. So overall, great weekend here. Let's go ahead and throw to a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to answer your guys' questions. First question here comes from Australian Laker. This pod has saved me a fortune in therapy fees, save for the blasphemy of suggesting pineapple does not belong on pizza. Thank you very much. I'm an international fan from Australia and flew in for a 2-day trip just to watch the Clippers versus Bucks game when Kawhi sat out. There were 8 of us traveling as a group, and the entire trip cost us $5,000 per person. It was a bummer that our first NBA live game was a huge waste of money. Anyway, my question is for Anthony. What Lakers apparel and accessories have you bought for Avery? And can you give me a breakdown of what Christmas Day is like in your household and how you balance Christmas and watching basketball games? Love you guys. So for Avery, I think we have like a sweater for her and a onesie. The thing is, she's at the age right now where it really doesn't make much sense to buy her clothes. She's already probably mostly outgrown the onesie that we have for her. And, you know, maybe we could get her a blanket. I think a blanket probably makes sense. But yeah, maybe that's what I'll do. When her next, like, 6-month birthday comes up, I'll give her a Lakers blanket. But overall, I always see my family buying their kids like super nice shoes when they're babies, and I'm like, they wear them once, don't really recognize what they're wearing, and at least you get a cool picture out of it, I guess. I'm pretty minimalistic when it comes to giving my kids stuff at this age, and even really taking her on trips. She won't remember being there. So it's nice that she's free right now to travel and take into parks and stuff like that. That's kind of cool. But overall, I'm waiting to spoil her when she reaches an age where she can actually fully understand what she's getting or where she is or whatever. As far as Christmas goes, it kind of varies by year. The first few years of our relationship, it didn't really matter that the Lakers were on, or there was probably a couple years in here when the Lakers were really, really bad that they weren't even on Christmas. So juggling the job and Christmas duties and responsibilities wasn't all that difficult. This year was a little different, obviously. Last year was a little different. Last year we were actually out of town, and then the Lakers went and beat Golden State, and I recorded, it was like midnight or something like that, in Texas, and I had spent the whole day basically in enjoying Christmas festivities, is how I'll put it, with the family out there. Took a nap and drank a bunch of coffee, watched the game, recorded, and then just knocked out, fell into a coma for a while. So I that's how I basically handled that. This year, I told you guys if the Lakers won, I would have come home and recorded a quick show to respond to the win. They did not. And I figured fewer people would want to listen to a show about a loss anyway. So I just basically, I watched the game and I didn't send as many tweets. I just mostly, my wife is a huge Lakers fan. My family was there too. All my side of the family, they're all huge Lakers fans as well. We actually joined Christmases between my family and Jen's family, so we all kind of got together, and the house that we were at, there's a bar area that we watched, and then all of the other family festivities were elsewhere in the house, and everybody just kind of walked around and mingled as it was. And then when I got home, I rewatched the game specifically, looking for a few things here and there, and that's how I handled it. So it's a year-by-year thing. It's a situation-by-situation thing. But overall, I try to spend more time with family than I do working, because you only get so many holidays. Let's go to the next question here. Jason from NYC writes, "Hey Pete/Anthony, love the pod and always a daily listener. Not sure if I missed it, but Anthony, just curious what, I believe it's Jen, your wife, has to say about the possibility of Cousins coming back. I know Coach Frank said they are waiting to see if he can contribute, but to me it sounds like there's no chance. Also, which NBA arena has the best food that you have been to? I've only been to Staples, and I don't think their food is very good, so I don't really know what to say there. I have heard good things about Portland's arena, I believe they also offer beer to credentialed reporters, so that gets my vote. For the Cousins thing, look, the Lakers and the NBA work together to decide whether or not the Lakers would get an exception for Cousins' injury based on the information that they had at present, that he would not be available until like June or July or something like that. So the NBA had an independent doctor come in, diagnose the injury, figure out how long he would be out for under most circumstances, and they deemed that the Lakers could get this exception because he was going to be out for most of the year. Vogel and the players around Cousins, and even Cousins himself, they have reason to be optimistic. For Cousins, he wants to be optimistic because there's a light at the end of the tunnel. For Vogel, he has never said a negative thing about a player in the history of his life. So that's not going to happen. And then the Lakers aren't going to, while they are going to, I guess, reap the rewards, for lack of a better term, for Cousins' injury, and will have that injury exception, overall, they aren't going to tell Cousins, hey, you know, he's not going to come back, or tell anybody really, float out there that he is just flat out not coming back, because that takes away the aforementioned light at the end of the tunnel for Cousins. So I could ask Jen, but it doesn't really matter. It always matters. Good catch there. It always matters what Jen has to say, but a doctor who has never worked with Cousins wouldn't have much more information than I do. And in this case, the league has deemed it that he probably won't be coming back this year. So I think we should probably let that go. And then the other thing too to take into account is whether it would actually be smart for Cousins to come back. He first blew his Achilles, Then he tore up his knee, and then, or no, tore up his hamstring, or quad or whatever, then tore up his knee. Like, his body just needs to get right. And, you know, like I said on a couple shows ago, all these things tend to be kind of related. You have compensatory injuries where the half of your body that is healthy wears down faster because it has to carry the unhealthy half of the body. You have the literal machinations of walking differently or running differently because of even the slightest limp. That can set off a chain reaction that further injures your body. So you have all these things kind of going on, and for Cousins, I think it would be really short-sighted for him to try to rush back this year and risk that further when he's probably running out of opportunities to sign NBA contracts. And, like, let's say he comes back this year and then hurts himself all over again after a handful of games or whatever. What team would sign him, right? Whereas if he focuses just on his rehab, getting fully back to full strength, not just physically, by the way, but also emotionally and mentally. You have to get your mind right also so that you can feel confident in the muscles that you now worked to get back to full health all over again, now three different times. So I from a medical standpoint, I obviously can't speak to that beyond the information that we have gotten from both the Lakers and the NBA to this point. But from a logistical, practical, and just logical standpoint, it makes more sense for us to count out Boogie for the year and have him come back a year from now. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, next question here comes from Gabby Sheen. Love the show. This is the Lakers fan from Puerto Rico that moved to Maryland recently. I asked you guys a question a couple months ago before the season started, asking if it was worth it to go to the Lakers game against the Wizards since it was at the end of the regular season, and I didn't think they were going to play AD or LeBron. But anyway, quick update. I did buy the tickets for the Lakers versus Wizards game, and I also bought tickets to see the Lakers versus the Clippers. My wife is very excited to go with me to both games, but she still doesn't know that I used our waiting, saving for one of the game's tickets. LOL, I'm planning to tell her after the game. I'll keep you guys updated. LOL, keep up the good work. Well, good luck, bud. I can't wait to see how that kind of goes for you here. I do kind of wonder, so you say your wife doesn't know, I guess future wife, I get what's going on there, but both those games should be really fun. Washington is a fun matchup for the Lakers. Their offense is really good. Their defense is awful, so the Lakers will probably do plenty of scoring there. And then Philly and the Lakers is one of the more unique matchups that the league has seen since it's gone to this analytics-heavy in this analytically heavy direction. This is kind of a throwback, punch your brains out kind of a matchup between two huge teams. That'll be a really fun game to be at too, even if it might cause some problems in the household. Let's go to the next question. NMoody30 writes, I hate the idea of load management, but it does look like LeBron needs a night. Does it look like LeBron needs a night or two off? His energy on both ends tailed off at the end of the road trip, and it's fair to wonder if he can keep up the intensity he's been playing at throughout the season. Also, Rondo is starting to kill us. Starting? I don't think we have to say starting there. Regarding LeBron's load management, there are two kinds of load management, right? There are two terms or two ways to go in a direction in having this conversation. One is when a player is just straight up hurt, right? If a player is not healthy, if a player is not 100%, they should probably not play, right? Or they should be extremely smart about whether or not they play through an injury that is medically defined by the team's medical team, right? If a player is 100% healthy, or if not 100% healthy as a player can be over the course of an 82-game NBA season, and they are sitting out, that's where I start to have a problem with it. And to kind of go back to the Australian listener who asked that question about said that they spent all that money to be able to go see that game, and then Kawhi didn't wind up playing. That's actively detrimental to the league, right? These games on national television between teams that might have a superstar here and there sitting while they are healthy, that legitimately hurts the league. And I think players should show some accountability on that. Teams should show some accountability on that and try to figure out better ways to manage their minutes or manage their workload over the course of the season. So, LeBron is nursing a couple injuries. You saw him get up again gingerly last night. Anthony Davis is nursing a couple of injuries that are very clearly still bothering both of them. And I do think, especially now that the schedule is going to lighten up here for the next week or two, it makes some sense to maybe give guys a night off here or there to be and still have a chance of winning. I think you can kind of stagger that with LeBron and Anthony Davis and still be smart about it. And I think that's what the Lakers are probably going to walk away doing here. So let's go to a couple more questions here. Hey, Anthony, sorry for the longest review, but I've been listening to the show for a long time. Some of my favorite memories are you and Harrison playing the sound effects for Hot Takes. And thinking back to that, it makes me feel like you guys were a ragtag team that I loved and listened to every day, but shows how much more professional the show is now. But thanks to you and now Pete for keeping the feel of the show the same, even through all the changes. But can you please get Harrison back on the pod again? And if you could put Harrison or an actual giraffe on this Lakers team, what would you choose? An actual giraffe is the obvious answer here. Those are harder to move than Harrison. And Harrison would even admit that. Now, regarding the show, I appreciate the longtime listeners. And it's something that I've always tried to do with the show. I have been kind of the one constant from the beginning of Locked On Lakers to now. And while Harrison has kind of gone his own direction and we've brought Pete on here, I've always thought that the show should have a kind of similar tone to it. And I've tried to maintain that even while Pete is a very different co-host than Harrison was. But you know what? Without change, progress is impossible. And the show has made progress with Pete. I'm sure it still would have made progress with Harrison, but I've always really tried to stay true to kind of the core values and what the first Locked On Lakers listeners ever would have liked about the show. I still try to bring that even while, you know, some of my approach to analyzing the Lakers has changed and while we have tried to make the show a little bit more professional. So I appreciate you noticing and I can't wait to see where it goes. Actually, I was talking with Harrison and Pete yesterday. Harrison's engagement party was going on. Actually, that was Friday night. And we were just kind of marveling at where the show is now and where it's coming from. And we have conversations about that kind of thing and about the industry in general. And while it's kind of wild to look back and look and really see how far this show and Pete's content and Harrison's content has all come, that just makes us more excited about what might be next. And I can't wait to see where you guys, frankly, take us. Let's go to the next question here. Danny, looks like Danny Rams 949. Hey guys, I really enjoy your guys' insight and keeping it real. Even when the Lakers were going through dark times, now that we are back among the best in the league, I feel we are one play away at least from lifting the Larry O'Brien trophy. Who do you think that one player is, and is it possible to acquire him? So I think there are two kind of pieces away. One can actually come from the roster as it's currently constituted, and Kuzma has kind of started to show that now that, as he will point out, he's been healthier. The Lakers needed another big wing just to throw as a big body against the Kawhis, the Paul Georges, the Lucas, the Pascal Siakams, the kinds of players that have given the Lakers problems so far this year on the defensive end. And even though Kyle Kuzma isn't going to slow down or even maybe even deter those guys at all, he's still a bigger body than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, than Alex Caruso, than whatever. And that length does help, if not in a one-on-one matchup, but just in general across the court. The length helps. You can't teach that. So if the Lakers can get a bigger wing who is an offensive threat, then that would really shore up some of their rotation. And that might be Kyle Kuzma. The other thing, and I know this for a fact, that the Lakers are really looking for, and others have reported this, so I'm just kind of confirming it, but the Lakers are really looking for a scoring point guard. And if they can find a scoring point guard on the open market, on the open buyout market or whatever, then that would be their preference. But if it really absolutely comes down to it, they are also open to making a trade to shore up that aspect of their roster. And, you know, it really makes sense. Right now, the only offensive-minded point guards on the roster are Troy Daniels and Quinn Cook and Rajon Rondo. And that's just not going to cut it. Right as I said those guys' names, Avery just screamed in the other room. So that pretty much sums up my thoughts on the matter with those guys. And I think the Lakers they know this. If I can see it, if we can see it, then they do too. And I think they're probably going to really focus on addressing that over the course of the season. Who those players might be? Obviously, I said Kyle Kuzma. The wing is tougher to define because most of the wings in the NBA are centerpieces of the franchise, and those guys are just tough to come by. Maybe Jay Crowder gets bought out, or maybe Andre Iguodala gets bought out. I don't think either of them do. I think eventually one of the teams makes a trade to keep them away from LA as much as it is to add them to their roster. So wings are going to be kind of tough. You kind of really have to hold your breath and hope that it's Kuzma. Point guards are a little different, though, especially scoring point guards. So if Orlando's season takes a turn for the worst, do they try to trade DJ Augustine? Does anybody give anything up for DJ Augustine? Can they buy him out? A lot of people like to bring up Darren Collison, who retired at the beginning of last summer and might be able to be convinced to come back, though I don't. That would be kind of tough because he would be vastly underpaid given what he's doing. And, you know, he retired for religious reasons that I don't really see him saying, you know what, I don't need to continue working on my religion. So that's a little tougher to figure out. Pete and I talked last show about Derrick Rose, and, you know, that's a complicated matter. I don't think he gets bought out either. I think somebody winds up trading for him. So the tough thing with the Lakers, with guys who are only going to hit the trade market, is that you now have to figure out what you're willing to give up. And while some teams are going to be okay with just, you know, if a player has an extra year on their contract that they don't want to pay next year, well, okay, match the contract this year, and that's about the only asset that they're looking to get rid of or acquire is the cap space next season. Or if it's a player who's expiring, well, what do the Lakers have to offer that can entice a team? Is THT enough? Is Talen Horton-Tucker enough? Do you want to give up Kyle Kuzma for a point guard and kind of solve one problem while potentially opening up another? You could, I guess, trade Kyle Kuzma away, sign Jeff Green, and then add a point guard, and that would probably be the most solid roster the Lakers could have this year. But then you also give up on the upside that they would have next year by seeing what Kyle Kuzma could grow into be. So these things aren't easy yes or no kind of questions, and how they answer them is really going to define how the rest of the season goes. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete will be back tomorrow. We are going to figure out how we want to approach the New Year's holiday. It's not going to be quite the same as Christmas just because New Year's is a little different. There's fewer family things to take care of there. So we'll figure out how that's going to look, and we'll let you know as soon as we figure that out. But for now, thank you very much for the questions. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.